Chapter 40. Great Events. There is an isle in the sea, not far from the happy isle of Zarathustra, on which a volcano ever smokes, of which isle the people, and especially the old women among them, say that it is placed as a rock before the gate of the netherworld, but that through the volcano itself the narrow way leads downwards, which conducts to this gate. Now about the time that Zarathustra sojourned on the happy isle, it happened that a ship anchored at the isle, on which stands a smoking mountain, and the crew went ashore to shoot rabbits. About the noontide hour, however, when the captain and his men were together again, they saw suddenly a man coming towards them through the air. And a voice said distinctly, "It is time, it is the highest time." But when the figure was nearest to them, it flew past quickly, however, like a shadow, in the direction of the volcano. Then did they recognize with the greatest surprise that it was Zarathustra, for they had all seen him before, except the captain himself, and they loved him as the people love, in such wise that love and awe were combined in equal degree. "Behold," said the old helmsman, "there goes Zarathustra to hell." About the same time that these soldiers landed on the Fire Isle, there was a rumor that Zarathustra had disappeared. And when his friends were asked about it, they said that he had gone on board a ship by night, without saying whither he was going. Thus there arose some uneasiness. After 3 days, however, there came the story of the ship's crew in addition to this uneasiness. And then did all the people say that the devil had taken Zarathustra. His disciples laughed, sure enough, at this talk, and one of them said even, "Sooner would I believe that Zarathustra has taken the devil." But at the bottom of their hearts, they were all full of anxiety and longing. So their joy was great when on the fifth day Zarathustra appeared among them. And this is the account of Zarathustra's interview with the fire dog. "The earth," said he, "has a skin, and this skin has diseases. One of these diseases, for example, is called man, and another of these diseases is called the fire dog. Concerning him, men have greatly deceived themselves and let themselves be deceived. To fathom this mystery did I go o'er the sea, and I have seen the truth naked, verily, barefooted up to the neck. Now do I know how it is concerning the fire dog, and likewise concerning all the sprouting and subversive devils, of which not only old women are afraid. Up with you, fire dog, out of your depth," cried I, "and confess how deep that depth is. Whence comes that which you snort up? You drink copiously at the sea. That does your embittered eloquence betray. In sooth, for a dog of the depth, you take your nourishment too much from the surface. At the most, I regard you as the ventriloquist of the earth. And ever, when I have heard subversive and spouting devils speak, I have found them like you, embittered, mendacious, and shallow. You understand how to roar and obscure with ashes. You are the best braggarts and have sufficiently learned the art of making dregs boil. Where you are, there must always be dregs at hand, and much that is spongy, hollow, and compressed. It wants to have freedom. Freedom you all roar most eagerly, but I have unlearned the belief in great events when there is much roaring and smoke about them. And believe me, friend Hullabaloo, the greatest events are not our noisiest, but our stillest hours. Not around the inventors of new noise, but around the inventors of new values does the world revolve. Inaudibly it revolves. And just own to it. Little had ever taken place when your noise and smoke passed away. What if a city did become a mummy, and a statue lay in the mud? And thus do I say also to the o'erthrowers of statues. It is certainly the greatest folly to throw salt into the sea, and statues into the mud. In the mud of your contempt lay the statue, but it is just its law that out of contempt its life and living beauty grow again. With diviner features does it now arise, seducing by its suffering and verily, it will thank you for o'erthrowing it, you subverters. This counsel, however, do I counsel to kings and churches, and to all that is weak with age or virtue, let yourselves be o'erthrown, that you may again come to life, and that virtue may come to you. Thus spoke I before the fire dog. Then did he interrupt me sullenly and asked, Church, what is that? Church, answered I, that is a kind of state, and indeed the most mendacious. But remain quiet, you dissembling dog. You surely know your own species best. Like yourself, the state is a dissembling dog. Like you, does it speak with smoke and roaring, to make believe, like you, that it speaks out of the heart of things. For it seeks all by means to be the most important creature on earth, the state, and people think it so. When I had said this, the fire dog acted as if mad with envy. What, cried he, the most important creature on earth, and people think it so? And so much vapor and terrible voices came out of his throat that I thought he would choke with vexation and envy. At last he became calmer, and his panting subsided. As soon, however, as he was quiet, I said laughingly, You are angry, fire dog, so I am in the right about you. And that I may also maintain the right, hear the story of another fire dog. He speaks actually out of the heart of the earth. Gold does his breath exhale, and golden rain. So does his heart desire. What are ashes and smoke and hot dregs to him? Laughter flits from him like a variegated cloud. Adverse is he to your gargling and spewing and grips in the bowels. The gold, however, and the laughter, these does he take out of the heart of the earth. For that you may know it, the heart of the earth is of gold. When the fire dog heard this, he could no longer endure to listen to me. Abashed did he draw in his tail, said bow wow in a cowed voice, and crept down into his cave. Thus told Zarathustra. His disciples, however, hardly listened to him, so great was their eagerness to tell him about the sailors, the rabbits, and the flying man. What am I to think of it, said Zarathustra? Am I indeed a ghost? But it may have been my shadow. You have surely heard something of the wanderer and a shadow. One thing, however, is certain. I must keep a tighter hold of it, otherwise it will spoil my reputation. And once more Zarathustra shook his head and wondered, What am I to think of it? Said he once more. Why did the ghost cry, It is time, it is the highest time? For what is it then, the highest time? Thus spoke Zarathustra. Chapter 41. The Soothsayer. And I saw great sadness come over mankind. The best turned weary of their works. A doctrine appeared, a faith ran beside it. All is empty. All is alike, all has been. And from all hills there re-echoed, All is empty, all is alike, all has been. To be sure we have harvested, but why have all our fruits become rotten and brown? What is it fell last night from the evil moon? In vain was all our labor, poison has our wine become. The evil eye has singed yellow our fields and hearts. Arid have we all become, and fire falling upon us. Then do we turn dust like ashes. Yea, the fire itself have we made weary. All our fountains have dried up, even the sea has receded. All the ground turns to gape, but the depth will not swallow. Alas, where is there still a sea in which one could be drowned? So sounds our plaint across yellow swamps. Verily, even for dying have we become too weary. Now do we keep awake and live on in sepulchres. Thus did Zarathustra hear a soothsayer speak, and the foreboding touched his heart and transformed him. Sorrowfully did he go about and wearily, and he became like to those of whom the soothsayer had spoken. Verily, said he to his disciples, a little while, and there comes the long twilight. Alas, how I shall preserve my light through it, that it may not smother in this sorrowfulness. To remoter worlds shall it be a light, and also to remotest nights. Thus did Zarathustra go about grieved in his heart, and for 3 days he did not take any meat or drink. He had no rest and lost his speech. At last it came to pass that he fell into a deep sleep. His disciples, however, sat around him in long night watches and waited anxiously to see if he would awake and speak again and recover from his affliction. And this is the discourse that Zarathustra spoke when he awoke. His voice, however, came to his disciples as from afar. "Hear, I pray you, the dream that I dreamed, my friends, and help me to divine its meaning. A riddle is it still to me, this dream. The meaning is hidden in it and encaged, and does not yet fly above it on free pinions. All life have I renounced, so I dreamed. Night watchman and grave guardian have I become, aloft in the lone mountain fortress of death. There did I guard his coffins. Full stood the musty vaults of those trophies of victory. Out of glass coffins did vanquished life gaze upon me. The odor of dust-colored eternities did I breathe. Sultry and dust-covered lay my soul. And who would have aired his soul there? Brightness of midnight was ever around me. Lonesomeness cowered beside her. And as a third death-rattled stillness, the worst of my female friends. Keys did I carry, the rustiest of all keys, and I knew how to open with them the most creaking of all gates. Like a bitterly angry croaking ran the sound through the long corridors when the leaves of the gate opened. Ungraciously did this bird cry. Unwillingly was it awakened. But more frightful even and more heart-strangling was it when it again became silent and still all around. And I alone sat in that malignant silence. Thus did time pass with me and slip by, if time there still was. What do I know thereof? But at last there happened that which awoke me. Thrice did there peal peals at the gate like thunders. Thrice did the vaults resound and howl again. Then did I go to the gate. Alpa, cried I, who carries his ashes to the mountains? Alpa, Alpa, who carries his ashes to the mountain? And I pressed the key and pulled at the gate and exerted myself. But not a finger's breadth was it yet open. Then did a roaring wind tear the folds apart. Whistling, whizzing, and piercing, it threw to me a black coffin. And in the roaring and whistling and whizzing, the coffin burst up and spouted out 1,000 peals of laughter. And 1,000 caricatures of children, angels, owls, fools, and child-sized butterflies laughed and mocked and roared at me. Fearfully was I terrified thereby. It prostrated me, and I cried with horror as I ne'er cried before. But mine own crying awoke me, and I came to myself. Thus did Zarathustra relate his dream, and then was silent, for as yet he knew not the interpretation thereof. But the disciple whom he loved most arose quickly, seized Zarathustra's hand, and said, "Your life itself interprets to us this dream, O Zarathustra. Are you not yourself the wind with shrill whistling, which burst open the gates of the fortress of death? Are you not yourself the coffin full of many-hued malices and angel caricatures of life? Verily, like 1,000 peals of children's laughter comes Zarathustra into all sepulchres, laughing at those night watchmen and grave guardians, and whoever else rattles with sinister keys. With your laughter will you frighten and prostrate them. Fainting and recovering will demonstrate your power over them. And when the long twilight comes, and the mortal weariness, even then will you not disappear from our firmament, you advocate of life. New stars have you made us see, new nocturnal glories. Verily, laughter itself have you spread out over us like a many-hued canopy. Now will children's laughter ever from coffins flow. Now will a strong wind ever come victoriously to all mortal weariness. Of all this are yourself the pledge and the prophet. Verily, they themselves did you dream, your enemies. That was your sorest dream. But as you awoke from them and came to yourself, so shall they awaken from themselves and come to you. Thus spoke the disciple, and all others then thronged around Zarathustra, grasped him by the hands, and tried to persuade him to leave his bed and his sadness and return to them. Zarathustra, however, sat upright on his couch with an absent look. Like one returning from long foreign sojourn did he look on his disciples and examine their features, but still he knew them not. When, however, they raised him and set him upon his feet, behold, all of a sudden his eyes changed. He understood everything that had happened, stroked his beard, and said with a strong voice, "Well, this has just its time, but see to it, my disciples, that we have a good repast, and without delay. Thus do I mean to make amends for bad dreams. The soothsayer, however, shall eat and drink at my side, and verily, I will yet show him a sea in which he can drown himself." Thus spoke Zarathustra. Then did he gaze long into the face of the disciple who had been the dream interpreter, and shook his head.